The following is a production of Art Trap Productions, brought to you by the Gallifreyan Embassy and has been made possible by supporting subscribers and donations from listeners like you. This episode brought to you by Podshock supporting subscribers. Go to arttrap.com/podshocksupporter to become a supporting subscriber. Support the show and get extra content and other bonuses. This episode also brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download at audiblepodcast.com/arttrap. Over 75,000 titles to choose from for your iPod or MP3 player. This episode is also supported by the Doctor Who Podshock Podcast Companion app for your iPhone, iPad, or iPod Touch, now available in the iTunes App Store. Breaking news on Gallifrey 22. What follows next is Doctor Who Podshock episode 225, recorded live at New York Comic Con with special guest Tony Lee. But first, we have some breaking news concerning Gallifrey 22, the premier annual Doctor Who convention in Los Angeles in February. This is Louis Trapani, and joining me now is Sean Lyne of the Gallifrey 1 conventions with some urgent information regarding the hotel situation for the upcoming convention. If you heard the latest Sonic News Driver episode released on the 16th of October, the following segment is the same, in which case you may want to skim ahead. Breaking news with me right now is Sean Lyne from the Gallifrey 1 conventions, and he's here with some late breaking news concerning an event that's just like 4 months away. Gallifrey 1, actually it's Gallifrey 22, Islands of Mystery, right, Sean?
Absolutely, and yeah, it's kind of funny that we have to do this 4 months in advance, but I appreciate you helping me get the word out.
Absolutely.
Well, here's the deal. We just announced today that we've actually officially sold out our hotel. Now, let me backtrack because it's a bit more complicated than that. But basically, as many people know, the Gallifrey 1 convention, which will be going into its 22nd year in February, we for many, many years were a fairly small convention. And over the last 4 years, we've actually doubled in size. And because of all of the interest, you know, we had 1,600 people this past year, just under 1,600. Mm-hmm. Because of all the interest that we've had, people have been reserving their hotel rooms earlier and earlier every year. And this year, unfortunately, they have simply run out of enough rooms at the discounted rate that we have, which was $100 per night. Mm-hmm. We have the added complication this year of the 2011 NBA All-Star Game that is the same weekend, and all the hotels in Los Angeles are pretty full anyway. So the problem that we've had simply is that we've had to announce that the Marriott itself, which is the hotel that we're at, the Los Angeles Airport Marriott, has officially sold out of hotel rooms at the rate that we've been offering them. However, there are many options, starting with the Marriott itself. There are $150, about $149, I think, is the current going rate, which is a limited rate. There are hotels in the area that are actually somewhat cheaper than even the Marriott. Some of the discount chains like La Quinta and Holiday Inn Express and Super 8 and so forth that are actually quite inexpensive. What I'm doing here, you know, the support we get from Podshock always every year is fantastic, and I really appreciate you letting me on here to let people know that we have plenty of opportunities and options for people to still come to the convention. The convention's not sold out by any stretch of the imagination. We have a ton of guests, and we have a lot of interest in the convention this year, and we hope that people will come out and join us. And if you're coming from out of town, don't let the fact that we don't have any of the discount rooms at our hotel dissuade you. There's plenty of opportunities in the area, and if you go to our website, you can find out.
Well, as you said, you still can get a discount rate with it's not the convention discount rate, but it's still a discount rate for the hotel itself. I'm not sure how long it will last, but there's a promotion or a deal. If it's called Park Here, Fly There.
Right.
Which, if you go to the Marriott website, the main website, at least that's where I found it, and you punch in the information as far as what dates and where you want to, you know, stay, it will come up with the Marriott. And if you choose that, and then there's an option there on the top for deals. And if you click on that, there's a deal called Park Here, Fly There. And that's only $149 a night, which is only $49 more than when I say only, the regular rates are $250 a night. So it's still $100 less than the regular rate, right?
Absolutely. And, you know, there's the Crowne Plaza Hotel, which is, we counted, it's actually less than 1,000 feet from the door of the Marriott, and it's $132 a night. The only deal is you have to actually pay in advance for that, but they do have the ability to cancel reservation at the almost last minute. What we're trying to communicate with everybody is that there are plenty of options in the area. This is very new to us. You know, a friend of mine actually posted on Twitter probably no more than 10 minutes ago while recording this that these are long since past the days where we worried about making our commitment to the hotel. We're far above it. We've never had this much interest in Gallifrey, and how we know that is that on October 1st of last year for the 2010 Gallifrey one, we had about 615 pre-registered members at the time, and we ended up with 1,600. We're about 860 right now, which is a huge jump for us. Yeah. Part of it are people that are registering early, and we have a lot of new people coming. So our convention, while I hate to say it's been getting away from us, it's been really growing exponentially, and which, you know, I think just because of word of mouth and of, you know, the news that's gotten out from people like you and Ken and James and the people at Podshock have been doing so much word of mouth for us.
Trouble, we apologize.
No. We love it. We appreciate it. We try to put on a terrific show. But at the same time, you know, it's difficult for us. This is new territory for us, being a larger convention than we've had to deal with in the past. I mean, this took us by surprise. And I'll tell you, we have committee people on our convention committee that hadn't made their room reservations either, because they don't think about it until, you know, a couple months before.
Yeah, I didn't normally, you know, we've been going there now for the past, you know, several years, and I know myself, I usually start thinking about it, you know, come November or so, let's get the airlines booked and the flights all arranged, and now you have to, you know, bring that up and bring, you know, start doing it much earlier now.
Exactly. And, you know, I mean, we announced our guest lineup. We actually had 10 guests confirmed by, I think it was the end of March of this year. So, I mean, everything happened really, really quickly this year. And I think the tremendous amount of energy that is in this convention that I've actually not seen in the 22 years that I've been doing this. This is the first time I've seen all the energy this early, you know, and it helps that we have, you know, Peter Davison, the Fifth Doctor, I mean, Janet Fielding, Sarah Sutton, and Matthew Waterhouse, you know, the trio of companions.
Yeah.
And then we have Tracy Simpson and Peter Bennett, who were the producers of the last season of Doctor Who, and who themselves have been involved in these productions for quite a number of years. And, you know, John Leeson, Kyle Owen, and Tom Price from Torchwood. We just confirmed Sheridan Smith from Big Finish, the audios. Ian McNeice, who is Winston Churchill. We've got Jane Espenson and Doris Egan, who are writers on the new seasons of Torchwood. And both of them, you know, if you're a science fiction television fan, you know who these ladies are. So, I mean, there's a ton of people coming, and I think it's just we had so many guests announced ahead of time that, you know, people were making a lot of plans early, and, you know, we just hit that critical mass a lot earlier than we thought we would.
And at the same time, we don't want to frighten people off thinking that it's going to be an overcrowded convention. The hotel is still spacious. There's still plenty of room there, and it's still a very friendly convention because it's been growing over the past few years, and that it still maintained that warm, intimate feeling, which I enjoy. Last weekend, I just came back from New York Comic Con, and it's a great show, but it's not, you know, it's a totally different experience, you know.
I heard there were 95,000 people.
Yes.
That's small. You know, we have San Diego Comic-Con, which I think was 150 this year, 150,000. But no, that's the thing. Number one is the convention won't be shoulder to shoulder. We'll never do that. We actually just got the entire ground floor of the convention center. We've traditionally had about half to maybe three-fifths of it.
Yeah.
And we have the entire convention center of the hotel.
That's great.
We have about 40, 45 people that work on this convention. We go out of our way to make sure that people have a good time. We don't bilk people. You know, we're very, very low rates. It's still only $65 to register for the entire weekend right now until the end of November. Mm-hmm. We put that extra personal touch to make sure that, you know, people don't think that this is not a professional convention. This is not going to Comic-Con or something like that. That no matter how many people we have, it's still going to have that hometown feeling. And I want to thank, in large part, Podshock, who you guys have been responsible for something that we actually have kind of branded for our convention for the very first time this year. We're actually officially calling it LobbyCon. It's the Thursday night festivities that the three of you are sort of right in the middle of, which is basically 200 to 300 people taking over the lobby in the hotel bar on the Thursday night before the convention. It's almost an official part of the con now. It's great.
It was a lot of fun last year. So, yeah, we're looking forward to doing it again this time around. And again, we want to make sure that everyone's there and everyone has accommodations. And and not to be frightened off if you can't get the group rate, you know, the original group rate, there's still plenty of other options available. I didn't mind today as well. So, get on board and get on, you know, try to get that rate that I spoke about, the park and fly,
absolutely.
Park here, fly there, whatever it's called, or get another, you know, like you said, there's a hotel right next door, which was 1,000 feet away.
Yeah, exactly. The Crown Plaza. If you go to our website, gallifreyone.com, gallifreyone.com, you can see there's actually a list of hotels. We did research this morning on a variety of the websites like Expedia and Travelocity and so forth to find other rates for people. But I also want to reiterate, we are absolutely in no danger whatsoever of selling out the convention itself. There's not a prayer of that happening. Like I said, we increased the size. We have a ballroom that seats about 1,300 people now, and we usually sat about 700-800 people. So, because obviously not everybody comes to everything at the same time. So we have no danger of selling out. We have no danger of filling up. And that's really what we're trying to communicate, is just because we've sold out this one rate, there's still hotel rooms, there's still plenty of memberships available, and we hope people will come and join us.
It's going to be a lot of fun. I'm looking forward to seeing you again, Sean. I'm looking forward to seeing everyone there, you know, and all the new people too. There's a lot of new people showing up. So it's, it's something that to look forward to. It's a holiday in itself.
Absolutely. And we hope it will be for many years to come. So, but thank you so much again for your support.
Thank you. Thank you for taking some time out to share the news with our listeners.
Absolutely. Thanks a lot, Lewis.
So book your rooms now and make your plans for Gallifrey 22 in Los Angeles. It's taking place on February 18th, 19th, and 20th, 2011. Once again, Doctor Who Podshock will be recording a live show there on stage, and many other events going on in and around the convention, which are not part of the regular programming. So it's an event that you don't want to miss. Once again, we thank Sean Lyon for joining us and explaining the current situation with the hotel to the listeners of the Sonic News Driver and Doctor Who Podshock. And that concludes our breaking news on Gallifrey 22. We now go to Doctor Who Podshock, episode 225, recorded live at New York Comic Con with special guest Tony Lee.
Live from New York Comic Con, this is Doctor Who Podshock.
Doctor Who Podshock.
Okay, well, let's do it.
No, I...
You know, whatever it is, if it's valuable, send it to us.
For the best in all things Doctor Who, it's Doctor Who Podshock, the podcast all about Doctor Who, the longest-running science fiction television program, with Lewis Trapani.
Hello.
Ken Deep.
Hello.
James Norton.
Hello.
News.
Fabulous.
Reviews.
Oh, no.
And fan mail for James.
Over 40,000.
Doctor Who Podshock, from the Gallifreyan Embassy.
You know, that guy James was really cool. Oh, yeah, we blew that.
I'm the Doctor, and who are you?
Who are you?
The Gallifreyan Embassy in its 25th year presents Doctor Who Podshock, episode insert number right here. My name is Ken Deep, along with my host, Mr. Lewis Trapani.
Hello, everyone. Hello, New York Comic Con.
And our very special guest, the man himself, a rock star, Mr. Tony Lee.
Thank you.
Tony is the writer and showrunner for the IDW Doctor Who comic, a very successful comic, I might add, and
well, thank
a great
you.
Deal of fun. Before we start our interview and our show, I wanted to go through a couple of quick announcements. First, thank you very much for being supportive of Doctor Who Podshock. Podshock.net is the website. We have an event coming up in November to celebrate the 25th anniversary of the Gallifrey Embassy on Long Island in Mineola, New York, at a place called Eleanor Rigby's. Appropriate, this would have been John Lennon's birthday weekend. Eleanor Rigby's in Mineola, only two blocks from the Long Island Railroad. We are welcoming back Miss Daphne Ashbrook, who is here this weekend at New York Comic Con. She's back for an intimate evening. It's going to be a very small crowd. I hope everybody gets their tickets as soon as possible. Podshock.net/25th is the link for direct link for tickets to that. And also, don't forget, if you are an iPhone or iPad user, the Doctor Who PodShock iPhone app is available now. It's very handy and very convenient. It has news and views and things and podcasts and exclusives and all kinds of stuff. It's part of our 21st century initiative. Much easier than mailing out newsletters. Okay, enough of this news and stuff and things, but we have a very special guest with us on the program today here in New York, because this is New York Comic Con, and it's very appropriate that you, after a very long time, are joining us on the podcast, Mr. Tony Lee.
Hello there. I will apologize to start with. I'm losing my voice because I might have accidentally partied a bit too hard last night. Usually I have a very clipped British tone. Today I sound like the guy that phoned you at 4 in the morning and asked you what you were wearing, so I am very sorry about that. If you can't hear me, let me know. If you're excited by my tones, also let me know.
Tony will be happy to give out his phone number and you can call him later. You went to an MTV party last night. When I said before that you were a rock star, how do you get invited?
I'm sorry, I didn't go to the MTV party. I was the MTV party. No, really. obviously, as well as writing Doctor Who, which takes up a lot of my time and is incredibly fun, I write other comics. And if you haven't heard, MTV are now doing comics. It's called MTV Comics. And I have two comics that are going up on it, one of which is called Agent Mom, and it's co-written by me and Elena Huffman, who, if you've watched Stargate Universe or if you watch Smallville, you'll know her. And Dan Baldwood is doing the artwork, who's my insane genius artist friend. And the other one is called The Gloom, which is also by Dan Baldwood and myself. And it's a very insane thing. It involves a 1940s pulp noir. A review of it many years ago said, buy this comic, sell a kidney if you have to. And all you need to know is it has a monkey with a fez. And this was about 5 years ago, so I'm on the pulse.
Fezzes are cool now, apparently.
Fezzes are cool.
Especially if you bring a mop, as one person did today. So MTV's getting into comic books, which is very appropriate because they're getting out of music television.
Oh, they've been out of music for a while.
But apparently they're giving things up and going into new things. So comics is what MTV is going towards, you think?
I'm sorry.
That was interesting.
Sorry, the crow's trying to escape. I think they're looking at what the market is. I think it's quite good they've actually created MTV Geek, which is, obviously, they've realised that people do like this sort of thing. They've got MTV Splash Page, which is about comics and the movies, and they're looking a lot more at science fiction. If you don't read MTV Splash Page, do, because Rick Marshall, who's the main journalist for it, is a massive Doctor Who fan, and you can pretty much find any person he interviews, he will get a Doctor Who question in somehow. So he really is keeping the dream alive.
Britney Spears on there or something, and it's like, hey, what does Doctor Who mean to you? And
they're
like,
very much.
It means I want to get out of here.
Yeah, it's very much a case of like, hey, Britney, when you shaved your head, did you feel that you were like Alpha Centauri?
Well, if you remember, you may not because you're over in the UK, but Saturday Night Live here in the United States, where they had Paris Hilton, didn't she do something with a Dalek or something? So maybe Paris Hilton.
Hang on, we've seen Paris Hilton's movies in England. She did a Dalek.
Yeah. Or it did her. Tough crowd tonight, I tell you what. Okay, a couple of... Yes, go on. Moving along as the temperature of my body comes down a few degrees. Matt Smith Comics. When can we expect Matt Smith joining us on the IDW line? This is like a sort of semi-series.
No, you actually have to explain this one because there are two Matt Smiths. There is Matt Smith, the 11th Doctor, and then, of course, there is Matthew Dale Smith, the artist.
Okay. Matt Smith, the Doctor, Dr. 11.
Right.
He is. There was a case where you had sort of a timeline when you were going to start. Did that change, or are you on schedule for an 11th Doctor comic finally coming to stands?
Well, first off, I want to ask a quick question. Hands up here, or make a noise, who, because it's a podcast, who actually reads the IDW Doctor Who comics? Or hands up who hasn't, or make a noise if you haven't. You are dead to me. For those of you who don't realise, IDW, who have things like the Transformers, the Star Trek licences, things like that, a few years ago got the Doctor Who licence and started with the 10th Doctor. And we did a couple of stories. Gary Russell did an amazing six-part sort of story. I did one called The Forgotten, which pretty much was every fanboy's dream. I got to write every Doctor and every companion and pretty much everything I ever wanted to write since I was four. And they said we want to do this ongoing series. And oh, we always knew that it was going to go about 16, 17 issues before Matt Smith turned up, because when we decided doing it, we already knew that it was Tennant's last year. He was going to do the specials. So I pitched this, like, I think it was like a 7,000-word pitch in the space of a day, going, this is my plan for Doctor Who. And it basically, we brought in new characters, and we always knew it was going to end a particular way. I can't say how it ends, because some of you realise the final episode comes out on Wednesday. They all die. No. So we always knew it was going to be set before a particular episode. That episode is Waters of Mars. So, you know, the final scene is pretty much the 10th Doctor with the spacesuit on going to Mars, and you find out why he was like he was when he sort of turns up and why he doesn't want to get involved and stuff like that, bless you. And basically, we always knew it was going to be about 16, 17 issues that we were going to have it, and originally we were going to have it that something incredibly bad happens and the 10th Doctor can't deal with it, and there's a major problem and he goes away. He's really ill and he leaves, and it was going to be effectively goes into Wars of Mars, goes into the next thing, dies, and then comes back as Matt Smith. And it was literally going to be in the book. It was going to be a case of, he goes, no, I can't deal with it, and he goes. And everyone goes, ah. And then there's like a panel, and then it returns, and then the door opens, and Matt Smith comes out and goes, miss me? And then basically, and the next episode is Matt Smith sorting out Tennant's absolute cock-up. But then we kind of thought, we didn't really want to do that because it felt a bit, well, you know, it's issue 18 and there's a new Doctor, and we wanted to do something a bit bigger. So we decided we were actually going to do a brand new number one. We were going to get a brand new team on board. Well, it's kind of a rotating team. We've still got Matthew Dalsmith, who is the current artist. He's going to be on board. And we're just going to start doing it all over again. And it meant we could actually have a solid break. So the comic ends, then Water of Mars happens, then we have the entire first season, Christmas special, and then Kapow in January, the first one comes out, and it's the 11th Doctor, Rory and Amy, and they're off having adventures.
When you go to do something like this, how much do you know about what's going on in the series? Are you brought in on it, where you're kind of saying, okay, this is what you can do, this is what you can't do?
No, not really. It's quite funny, because the BBC are very, very strict on making sure that nobody knows anything, because there are a ton of gossip columnists out there who do comics, who if they find something out, will put it out there because they know that everybody else will go with it. There's a site called BleedingCool.com by Rich Johnston, and he broke that Martha and Mickey were going to be married by the final one. And there was major problems with it, and people were sort of looking around going, who said this and what's going on? The fact it was in The Sun 6 months earlier was irrelevant. And basically, because of that, there's a lot of sort of, everybody keeps it a bit quiet and you don't really know. And I will say, a chunk of what I actually find out and what I work with is pretty much done from the Gallifrey-based spoilers section. You know, and you'll sort of see how things are going. I've got to say, I have one of the best script editors in the world. Gary Russell oversees the book. And to be honest, you couldn't ask for a better script editor, because Gary Russell knows everything. He's involved with Sarah Jane Adventures. He's been in Doctor Who since before Doctor Who was around. Trivia fact, kids, if you ever find out, Gary Russell was a child actor.
He was, yeah.
And he was in a thing called The Famous Five in the 70s. Google it.
He was one of the five.
But basically, he gives us a few things, and we'll say, hey, can we do this? And then he'll go, no. And we'll go, why? And he goes, because this is happening. And it gives us a chance of working around it. But when we started doing the 11th Doctor stuff, we wanted just to do simple adventures and things that weren't really going to affect the continuity. Anyone who reads the 10th Doctor knows that we just went wild with linking into various things, and we've got Victorian tortured, and in the final story we've got a Victorian professor named Hugh who's got a time machine and a granddaughter called Barbara, and we decided to do loads of stuff and play with it all. But with the 11th Doctor, we really wanted just to have solid stories. So it doesn't really matter what happens, to be perfectly honest. I mean, whatever we do can be pretty much set anywhere. I mean, we could even set it, you know, between the Christmas special and the last series. It can go anywhere, really. Until, obviously, Rory dies again, and then we have to say it was about them.
Are there any limitations when you come to thinking of a story? Story-wise, when you're going to go now, you're going to have the 11th Doctor, and you're not really concerned about what the show is doing. You're going to tell your own stories. Are there things you go, no, we can't possibly do that? Or you just let the imagination run wild?
The artist, Matthew Dalesmith, tried to kill me once when I said I want to do something where there's like 5,000 spacecraft, and he just cried at me. No, the problem I've got is we get a very good deal with the BBC. They kind of let us get away with a lot of things. I mean, anyone who read The Forgotten will know we actually had all stories involving all 10 Doctors, and then we actually had a scene set in the TARDIS control room with all 10 Doctors actually there in canon talking to each other. And I raised the bar for myself because it's like, yeah, how are you going to top that then? Okay, what are you going to do now? Oh, it's Charlie Chaplin. Oh, that was the one we weren't allowed to do, actually. We actually had, in the first two episodes, Doctor meets Charlie Chaplin, and we got to the point, it had been solicited, the picture was out, and someone in legal went, yeah, we think that actually the little tramp is a trademark look. So Archie Maplin was born, who looks like Charlie Chaplin, but with a slightly larger beard and a bowler hat. And it was a sort of a dodgy little thing there. We weren't too sure about that. We have had a couple of things where the BBC will go, oh, are you really sure you want to do that? We're doing a story involving Jack the Ripper, a three-part story involving the Doctor meeting Jack the Ripper, because anyone who is obviously aware that the Seventh Doctor met Jack the Ripper, but it wasn't this Seventh Doctor. It was like an alternate world Seventh Doctor. So no one's really played with it, and we decided we wanted to do this story. But it's quite a grim real-life story about, like, you know, dead prostitutes and bits of blood and intestines everywhere, and you can't really do a, oh, look, intestines. Intestines are cool. You know, it doesn't quite work that way, so you have to sort of work out how you can actually phrase it and what you can get away with. And
to have an edge but still not scare the hell out of the little kids. That kind
oh,
of
no,
thing.
We want to scare the hell out of the little kids.
And as far as doing a Jack the Ripper prior to that, Doctor Who has a long tradition of retelling the same story. Somebody says, you know, we haven't been to Atlantis. Yes, we have. Yeah, but it doesn't stop anybody from actually retelling the story.
I think there's been like five Doctors on the Titanic or something like that. Which I think is hilarious, because I want to do that episode where they're all walking around with like fake beards on them. It'd be great. It'd be brilliant. Oh, hang on a second.
you keep your eye out for that one in about a year, you figure? From now till it hits the stands as the...
What, you think I've actually written these yet? Oh, this is one coming next week. Oh, God, great idea. It's a Titanic.
All you need is fast piano music on top of that with them all zigzagging through the...
Panel one, all Doctors arrive. Panel two, big chase.
Running up and down corridors.
Page 22, end. That's how I work.
Well, how far ahead do you work?
I had the same thing when I started doing Doctor Who. One of the biggest problems we had with the first, when Gary Russell did the first six issues, was some of the artists, there was the BBC have to approve everything. The BBC approved the story, they approved the script, they approved the dialogue, they approved the art, the lettering, everything is approved. But it means that you're backwards and forwards, and it's all based on, like, you know, IDW are based in Los Angeles, England obviously is 8 hours ahead. And so you literally have this kind of backwards and forwards, and it can cause delays. So when I started doing the ongoing, I was literally writing part one of a two-parter, and then doing part one of a four-parter, then going part two of the two-parter, then part two of the four-parter, and then part one of a six-parter. And you were never actually quite... And at one point, Gary said to me, you've got the Doctor doing this, and I don't understand how he got that. And I'm like, oh, he got it saying part three of the other story. but I don't understand where he gets that from. He's like, well, you'll understand in about a month when I write that part of the story. And with the new series, we've got a rotating group of artists. So we've got Andrew Curry's doing the first one, which is just a one-shot. It's kind of like The Trouble with Tribbles, but with holographic spam, really. You know those emails you get that go straight into the top of the folder that you never look at that tell you you might have won money, or there's a nice Nigerian who's going to give you a lot of money if you give him your account, or you two can buy some nice blue pills and things like that. Well, imagine if that magic Doctor Who phone that he always has, someone tried to whap their email and it went a bit wrong. So we're doing that one with Andrew Curry, and then at the same time I'm also writing the Jack the Ripper one with Piers Rayner's doing that. And then at the same time I'm also writing episode 5, because that's a one shot being written by Mark Buckingham from Fables, who's coming on board to do one shot. So I'm having to make sure that one's done before I go back to Jack the Ripper. And that one's involving, like, the Doctor and Rory having a penalty shootout against Saxons. And I'm sort of... It's fun. Yay, Jack the Ripper. Fun, Jack the Ripper. So it's a bit odd.
Well, that probably keeps you from killing yourself, I'm sure.
Tony, is that one story that you just mentioned with the holographic phone, whatever, is that the one that's based on social media? Is this the story that I heard about you doing something that's... there's a planet where people friend each other and...
You've got a situation where Rory, still not getting the entire time travel thing, has picked up the magic phone and is trying to check his emails to see what people thought about the wedding, or see if anybody's put any pictures up on Friend Face or whatever we're going to call it. And obviously not realising the basis that technically it could even be 3 days ago, it could be 4 weeks ago. And in doing so, everything that was in his spam folder basically appears. So you actually have the first page is the Doctor's like talking to someone, asking him if he's had an accident recently. There's another guy going, "We have Hacksaw Jawsite or Lols Rolf Copter," and stuff. And Rory's going, "I'm really sorry. There's a strange cartoon character wandering around following Amy." And while then they land on a planet that's basically about an hour away from destruction from an invading army. And the Doctor's like, "Oh, I'll help you." And you've got things like Amy and Rory both bump into people they know. One is a girl that Rory knew at school, and the other is the not-so 58-year-old diving instructor that Amy met on her hen weekend. And they're both like, "Hello, we would like to be your friend." And they're like, "Yeah, we don't want to do that. We want to, you know, oh, then we must block you." And there's a lot of that. There's people following the Doctor around going, "You're really funny. Doctor just said this. Why are you telling people this? I'm telling everybody what you said. I'm retelling repeatedly." Retell. So we're doing as much as we possibly can.
I think if the Doctor was ever to use Twitter, it would be you that would introduce him doing that. By the way, at Mr. Tony Lee on Twitter, if you want to follow Mr. Tony Lee.
That's awesome. Yay, you've got Twitter. You understand enough to have a Twitter account.
This is the real Tony Lee. Your trademark waistcoat is not being worn this weekend. But this week we verified his account. And here's the little check mark. And it's the real Mr. Tony Lee.
That was the first Tony. I'm the second Tony.
The second one you've regenerated.
Don't get me wrong, waistcoats are cool, but I just decided it was time to stop wearing them. I'm going to wear a Viking helmet now instead.
Viking
helmets are cool.
We will be right back with our live show from New York Comic Con. This live show and others like it, such as our big live show on stage at Gallifrey One in Los Angeles each year, are only possible in part with your support. We had hoped that we could continue and grow the show now in its sixth year with advertisers and sponsors, but there have been too few from the Doctor Who and sci-fi community to take advantage of the sponsorship opportunities we offer. That is why so much of what we do is done solely through support from Podchuck supporting subscribers. If you are not already a Podchuck supporting subscriber, please consider becoming one. For a low monthly subscription fee, As a show support, not only will you be helping to continue and grow this show, but you'll get extra content as well. Plus, we have other ways of showing our appreciation, including occasional giveaways, discounts to special events, an email newsletter, and more. To become a Podshock supporting subscriber, simply go to GallifreyanEmbassy.org or Podshock.net and click on the Podshock supporting subscriber banner on the top there. Now more than ever, we need your support. And as always, if you are already a Podshock supporting subscriber, thank you. Thank you so much for your continued support. It does make a difference. We're going to get right back to our live show at New York Comic Con. Remember, shows like New York Comic Con and the annual Gallifrey conventions out in Los Angeles, and as well as many of the other big science fiction or even small science fiction conventions, often require traveling to. And what better way to pass that travel time, be it on a plane or train or an automobile or a TARDIS? You can pass that travel time away by listening to an audiobook. That's when you're not listening to podcasts, of course. For great audiobooks, look no further than Audible. Audible is the leading provider of digital audiobooks. They have over 75,000 titles to choose from in every genre, be it thrillers, business, history, science fiction and fantasy, and so much more. Audible content is compatible with your iPods, your iPhones, your iPads, MP3 players, over 500 devices for your listening pleasure, anytime, anywhere, just like this podcast. For you listeners of Doctor Who Podshock, Audible is offering a free audiobook download with a free 14-day trial to give you a chance to check out their service. As always, we like to make a recommendation, and this time we're going to continue with a previous recommendation that we made, which was Doctor Who Demon Quest, which is a series of audiobooks by Paul McGars, and it features Tom Baker as the Fourth Doctor in it. And the next part has just been released. It's The Demon of Paris. It stars Susan Jameson and Tom Baker as the Fourth Doctor. Let's hear a little bit from it right now.
Here we are, Mrs. Whibsy, the Gare du Nord. Didn't I promise you we'd get here by supper time?
I've never been to Paris before. I didn't tell the Doctor that. I didn't want him to go thinking I was pleased or anything, because I wasn't. Being dragged along like this into another of his ridiculous adventures.
Welcome to the center of the universe.
It's a bit busy.
Well, we're slap bang in the middle of La Belle Epoque. Everyone who's anyone wants to be here. Look over there, that man chewing on a chicken leg. I think it's the Prince of Wales. No, maybe Oscar Wilde.
Well, I hope I can keep the food down. I'm not used to anything too exotic.
Travel by rail and sea always gives me a hearty appetite. Come along, Mrs. Whibsy. Have you ever had frog's legs?
Oh. I'd never have thought travel in the 1800s could be so quick. But the Doctor had bundled us on board a series of trains and boats as if he was quite at home in the 19th century. That TARDIS of his had brought us forward in time almost 1900 years from the Roman period, still depositing us in the Sussex landscape that would one day become the village. We'd had to make the rest of the journey ourselves, during the early stages of which, for reasons best not gone into here, we were lugging an elephant with us. Some funny looks we got as well.
Mrs. Whibsy, come and see this.
Oh, there's always something. What's he gone and found now? He's like a little boy.
What do you think of that, eh?
Well, they're just posters, aren't they? Oh, no. Hang on a minute. They're the same as the one that came in that bag from the bring and buy sale.
Yes. Given to you in return for the TARDIS's spatial geometer. Exactly. Pass me our copy to compare, would you?
It was a famous poster from the time. You've probably seen the picture. Of a flamboyant-looking cabaret singer, Aristide Bruant. He's got on this big hat and a long scarf.
Only ours has been tampered with. The original by Henri Toulouse-Lautrec is subtly different. See?
Hardly subtle. One's got your face and one hasn't.
In the original, the scarf is short and orange. In ours, it's incredibly long and multicolored.
And look what he's holding in his hand.
Yes, an element from the spatial geometer.
So why would someone make a version of his poster looking like you?
Let's hope Lautrec has the answer to that when we meet him.
I must admit it was quite exhilarating being whisked through the noisy, smelly streets. The doctor had flagged down a carriage for us. A hansom cab, I suppose they'd have called it in London. And we bowled along the cobbled boulevard.
No, it's great that they're incorporating the Lautrec painting into the story, because I've seen that painting many times in, over the years, and going back to when the Gallifreyan Embassy was a fledgling organization, and there was one of the early founding members, Mitch, I believe it was, had that in his house, in his family's house. He had a print of that, or a poster of that painting on the wall there, and it just looked, it just screamed out, you know, the Fourth Doctor. And I believe over the years, I don't know if it was fan art or commercial art or whatever, someone had done a version with that painting of the character as the Fourth Doctor holding a sonic screwdriver. Classic stuff. I love that they are incorporating that painting into the storyline here. So this audiobook could be your selection, or any others that Audible has to offer. Once again, to download your free audiobook, simply go to audiblepodcast.com/arttrap. Again, that's audiblepodcast.com/arttrap, ARTTRAP, for your free audiobook. And don't worry, if you're driving right now, or you just can't write down that URL, or you're not at your computer, simply go to our website, gallifreyanembassy.org or podshock.net, and you can click on the banner ad there for the Audible offer. So now we'll go back to our live show at New York Comic Con with Tony Lee.
Only a few years ago, I think, you went to your first Doctor Who convention. Is that true?
In America, yes. I mean, as a kid, I used to go in England, but to give you a rough idea of the difference between... first off, hands up here who's been to a Doctor Who convention in the US. Oh, sorry, make a noise. Right, okay. In America, they've got things like Gallifrey 1 or Chicago TARDIS, Hurricane Who. All these conventions have like thousands of people, many hundreds of people turn up. At the average British convention, look around. Yeah, that's about it, really. For many years, it was a very small thing, and every year got lower as every person got older and more jaded, and it's never coming back. We'll never know if he actually has 13 incarnations, or just 12, or 14, or a dog. Actually, this voice sounds better than the other one, I think I'll start. And basically, it was a lot smaller, and, you know, you'd always have, like, Sylvester McCoy be there, or Colin Baker be there, and it was very nice to chat to and stuff like that, but it was almost like just a bit of a party, really. Just a bit of a sort of, oh, hello, it's me again. But then you go to, like, Gallifrey or something like that, and it's like, massive stuff, now on stage! And it's really good, it's showbiz, it's wonderful, and there's one thing I've got to complain about, and children, put your fingers in your ears. In England, if you're in a hotel and you are a resident, the hotel bar has to stay open until you go to bed. In America, this doesn't happen. And British writers who come over to American cons are seen wandering around the lobby looking confused. And Chicago TARDIS is on Thanksgiving, which means the bar shuts on the Thursday at 7, and the creators get in at 6, and you can actually see them going on the window of the pub doors.
It's not just British writers either, it's US podcasters as well.
Well, we think we've solved that problem with the bars closing early. You just bring your own at this point, in a flask or a jug.
Or a large bucket.
Yeah, or a bucket.
And when I say bucket, I mean truck.
Something with wheels. Something with wheels on it. And so your impression now, you're starting to become known as a guy who likes to go and be in the lobby. And you.
I'd like to be in the lobby.
Like to be in the lobby. Lobby count.
Muttering to himself.
You're usually surrounded surrounded by a throng of admirers who are there, hung on your every word.
Entourage.
Well, I am pretty awesome. there's a thing that I love in America, and in England you always have people hang out in a bar and they chat and stuff, but you've made this, you know, you've really taken this yourself. The Doctor Who conventions have LobbyCon. And LobbyCon is the bar is shut, but we will not be beaten. And it was great. And Gallifrey, in February, they actually, on one of the nights, there was like a badge of honour that people were still up at 6:45 in the morning. And they actually took a group photo of everybody there. And people only started going to bed when Paul Cornell got up and went to breakfast. And it's great because at the end of the day, the thing about a Doctor Who convention is you're full of fans who like the same thing. And I went to conventions when I was a kid, and you know, my first ever memory is 3 years old, watching the final Third Doctor, Planet of Spiders, watching him turn into Tom Baker with all my family around me. So, you know, all my life I've been a Doctor Who geek, and I've sat down with people and I've argued, you know, I've argued a toss about whether like the Suntarans should be fighting the Rutans, or perhaps the Draconian Empire maybe should be looking at maybe putting a bit more sort of feminism in the sides and stuff. And you do this, and to actually turn up to these events and people are like, just chat to you like you're a friend, is great. And I've made a lot of good friends from it. There are a lot of scary people. Scary people who go, no, he shouldn't have died. Yento's not dead. He's living in the 51st century, stroke Mars, stroke in the past, stroke with Jack, stroke in a farm in Kent, stroke whatever other Flash fanfic I've written this week. But we've learned how to get away from them quite quickly. We aim them at Paul Cornell. Because he's lovely and friendly and he'll chat to anyone. And he'll go, hello, and then you go, this is Paul, and you run.
So you're developing quite a reputation as someone who enjoys going to the convention, enjoying having a good time. This is your second New York Comic Con?
Hang on, sorry. Sorry, water. I'm going to
bathe. Are you sure that's water? Let me check that. Yeah, he was here last
year. This is my third New York Comic Con. I was here, first one was the Easter one, mm-hmm. a couple of years ago. Then I came to Snowfest, the Wind, which was the last one where you... the thing I love about New York, I love New York. I think it's an amazing place. There's something about I've travelled the world. I've literally, it's like one continent I've never been on. I think that's Antarctica. And literally,
that can be arranged.
And the one thing I love doing is you can't know a city or a town or a country until you get lost in it. You have to wander around randomly and then obviously don't do this at like 1 a.m. because when you get, excuse me, can you tell me how to get somewhere? And you make new friends and it's not good. But but basically you have to do it. And I love walking around New York. I mean, I did the New York Doctor Who group, Doctor Who New York. I did that on Wednesday.
And the hub, you might add. The hub. Me.
Hey, I didn't choose that one. Someone had a go at me because I was drinking Coke at one point. They're like, you can't drink Coke, have this.
I brought a lot of cash and I said, I have to get Tony something to drink. And I said, what do you need, Tony? He said, Coke. How deflating.
They're trying to shove two Killians at
him. Yes. Yeah. Guinness, Killian, something with a mix of Coca-Cola. Jeez, you could get
that. But it was great because basically, obviously, I walked down from like 42nd down to the village and it was a lovely day. But when it's windy, you these streets, these long, straight, square battleships they're wind tunnels. And depending on which way you were going to the convention centre or not, you either got there in half an hour or 5 minutes. But yes, I do all the Comic Cons. I've done San Diego for the last 7-8 years now. If you've not been to San Diego, go. It's absolutely incredibly insane.
I think New York's giving that a run for its money this weekend.
Oh, yeah.
This seriously was very difficult to move around. The crowd was just so solid. I love it being in October, by the way. I like it being in February.
I think it's really good.
As you said, from the moving around through the streets of New York is a little bit easier when you're not being pierced by the wind of February.
But no, I mean, I love coming to America anyway. I've got a nice new tradition, which is the Black Friday sales. I didn't know about this wonderful thing. It's like the magical land of Narnia. You don't go to sleep. You go in about 4 in the morning. You then walk across to Walgreens or to what's it? Is it Target? And you queue up with some like-minded people who all want to see what happens when the doors open. And then you have a bit of a foot race, and the winner gets a TV. It's brilliant. And if you walk around, you can see Rob Sherman with a handful of DVDs looking sheepish. And last year, I must have bought about a dozen waistcoats, which is really useful now.
Yes, you were introduced to Black Friday in Chicago.
It was great. Another windy city that you can get in 5 minutes if you go the wrong way.
Well, we'd like to thank you for stimulating the American economy single-handedly. And by the way, for your Antarctic needs, Antarctica TARDIS.
Antarctic needs.
Your Antarctic needs. Antarctica TARDIS is starting up soon, so you'll be invited to that, I'm sure, right?
That's
you
awesome. And Colin. I want to see 4 penguins dressed like Colin Baker. That would be just so awesome. It's like, so what are you then? I'm a polar bear. Yeah, but what are you really? No, I'm a polar bear. I don't know if polar bears are in Antarctica. I get it could be the other side. I don't care. I like penguins though. Oh God, no, they wouldn't. They'd all come as bloody Frobisher, wouldn't they?
Yes.
If you don't know who Frobisher is,
I'm clearly
again,
a Frobisher fan.
You're dead to me.
Is there anything on your wish list for...
Oh, God, yes.
No, not that list.
But I can't find a flying pony yet. But one day I will.
On your IDW Doctor Who comic wish list, is there something that... Do you work on a checklist? Like, okay, when I was 7, I always said the Doctor was going to do this. I mean, after The Forgotten.
I think a lot of The Forgotten was my wish list. Because if you haven't read it and you can't ever buy it, because I think it's actually sold out of its second print already. We had to convince IDW to do a second print, and we got like... I think what actually sold it was when MTV Splash Page interviewed David Tennant. And it was like a video interview, and they passed him a copy of The Forgotten. And while he's talking to them, he starts flicking through it, and he actually forgets he's being interviewed. And I think IDW went, ooh. And so it's now got It's Brilliant by David Tennant. And I've actually said we should do a third one. We're saying, I'm not in this, Matt Smith. but it was great because obviously I did a story of every single Doctor. I had a First Doctor story. I had all the way through. I mean, I had the Third Doctor, Joe Grant, the Brigadier with the rocket launcher, and Bessie. You know, I had
The price of admission right there.
All right, I had things like the Fifth Doctor meeting Jadoon. It was just a top fun thing to write. And a lot of my stories, I mean, there was a story I always wanted to write, which I didn't think I'd ever get a chance to, because I wrote it like about 7 years ago for Doctor Who magazine, and it never got done, which is called Old Friend, which was recently used in the annual, which was the Doctor meets a really old man who was, when he was a teenager, was a Doctor's companion of a future incarnation of the Doctor. And so you've got the Doctor chatting away to this old man who's going, oh, when we did this and we did this, because as far as he's concerned, the Doctor's probably regenerated onwards. And at the end, this is Emily, the one we created for the comic, is like, that's really sad, you know, because, like, you know, you don't know who he is. And he's like, yeah, but it'd be really cool because I will meet him and we will have all these adventures and stuff. And I wrote this, and then, of course, River Song turned up, and I was just like, I hate you, Moffat. But I really wanted to do that one. There's a couple I really want to do. The one I really, really want to do, and we will never, ever be allowed, and when she hears this, she will squeal like a small child, is Tammy Garrison, who does Tortured Babies. And if you've never seen Tortured Babies with a Z, go and Google it. It's awesome. It's in the entirety of Tortured as, like, the Muppet Babies. And she's awesome, and we were gonna pitch a one-shot called Planet of Error. And it was basically Planet of T, brackets, Error. And it was a Doctor lands on this world that's been created about this mythical person called the Doctor, and everything is wrong. And you had, the exciting train ride through Captain Jack's legs and weird things like this, like a giant Captain Jack leg straddling this wall, and you had to... It was... There was a lot of weird stuff in it. There was, but it was every in-joke and terrible thing you could think of was in this story. And we wrote it down. We got really excited. It was right after the last Chicago TARDIS, and we're all excited, and we just sent I think it was like a daiquiri to Jason Hayley of Big Finish, saying it's from the girls at the bar. We were in that kind of mood. And we were to do this, and then this, and oh, yeah, we do this, and oh, it'll be great. And then we read it the following day, and went, God, no. there was no way to do it. But I think... I'm sorry, I squeaked there at you. I think what I'd like to do is, I love doing the doctors meeting, you know, obviously other people, and I really would like to do it, you know, I'm getting old characters in. I think if I could do a story I really wanted to do, I'd like to do some more Brigadier, because I love the Brigadier. He was my favourite character of all time.
And there was a kind of a tradition where he's met every doctor, and if we never get to see it on screen, if it appears in print at least...
Well, the story I wanted to do is, I wanted to do a story where the 11th Doctor meets a younger Alistair Lethbridge-Stewart before he joins UNIT, and the whole point of the story is, Lethbridge-Stewart is leaving the military. He's young, he's had enough, he's doing his time, and the story basically is what convinces Lethbridge-Stewart to go and take the job offer with UNIT. And I kind of liked it that he never knows he's actually the Doctor. Mm. All the way through, he just knows he's some strange bloke with a bow tie on. And then at the end, the Brigadier goes and joins UNIT, and the Doctor makes him become the person that he is. But I just don't think I'm ever going to be allowed to do it, because it's just, you know, using Brigadier, using characters, and I'd want to really play with it.
You got to get somebody really hammered for something like that, don't you?
Yeah, and Gary Russell doesn't drink.
It's a really good idea. I really hope you know.
I'm full of
good
ideas.
And I love the idea. I'm always up for the Brigadier coming back in any capacity. I think the Brigadier is a wonderful character. And Nicholas Courtney, one of the most generous and wonderful people you could ever meet. And it was nice to even see him when he did the Sarah Jane appearance as well, Sarah Jane Adventures.
Yeah. No. Oh, there was one other thing I'd really like to do. And I am actually going to pitch it, but I don't think I'll ever be allowed. I want to do a Sontaran story. And I used Sontarans in... Fugitive, which if you read it is great, because it really is a start line to a joke, because it is the Doctor walks into a cell and there's a Sontaran, an Ogron and a Draconian. And it's basically this, it's a four part story where the Doctor and these three guys are basically chased around the universe by like really evil people, and they all like, it's like a buddy movie. It's but Brashak the Ogron is awesome and does like Brashak smash, Brashak hate puny Doctor. But I really liked writing the Sontaran, and I wanted to do a Sontaran story, because when they came on TV, you had the clones, and there was the Martha Jones clone and things like that. I want to do a body swap one where you've actually got the 11th Doctor running around as a Sontaran in the tweed jacket and the bow tie. I just think that'd be great.
It's all bursting out.
All bursting out, going, you look like a potato. Yeah, well, potatoes are cool.
You mentioned Big Finish before, and I guess a natural question for any Doctor Who fan, especially someone like yourself who's a writer coming up with such great ideas, Big Finish has this great history of doing the audio dramas and exploring ideas that couldn't be done on screen. What's the chances of you writing something for Big Finish and doing something beyond the illustrated medium?
I'm a jobbing writer. I actually started in radio, so doing something in audio would be nice. But to be perfectly honest, I mean... Big Finish has some of the best writers in Who writing their stuff.
You know, so are you saying they don't need you?
They don't need me. They really don't need me. They
now, come
some...
on.
No, I'm sorry. I've got
You're
to say...
bringing your ideas to the table, though.
Yeah, but the thing with Big Finish is they have some of the best writers in the business writing things all the time. They've got amazing stories. You've got the Bernie Summerfield range. You've got, obviously, Doctor Who. You've got the classic adventures, the Eighth Doctor stuff. I'd love to, down the line. But at the moment, I love the comic, and it's real fun.
Do we have any Big Finish listeners in the crowd? And how many of you would like to see Tony write for a Big Finish if he was given that? I think you could do better than that.
I've got to say, I thought it would be hilarious if nobody made the sound just then. I'd like to, and obviously I've chatted to Nick and I've chatted to Jason, and I get on with them. But as I said, at the end of the day, I'm just really happy I'm doing a comic. I mean, as I said, I'm a massive fan of Doctor Who, and the fact they've actually still allowed me to do it, the fact they've hired me again to do the 11th Doctor, I'm counting my blessings like that.
Well, because you started out long before the Doctor Who comic came out. When the idea of IDW doing a Doctor Who comic... came along, were you the guy they pointed to, or did you sell them on it? Like, I'm the guy.
I'm going to tell you my IDW story, and when tomorrow you will hear that I've been fired, you'll understand. Chris Ryle at IDW, I've been pitching him for many years, just, you know, stalking him, saying, hey, Chris, how are you? Here's a picture of me in your bedroom. About giving me a shot at doing something, or your bunny gets it. And basically, I heard that the Doctor Who license had come up. I'd done Doctor Who magazine. I did a three-part called FAQ, which, I'll be honest, really wasn't one of the best stories I've ever done. Mainly because when we did it, nobody knew what the 10th Doctor was going to be like. We'd literally had 20 minutes of the Christmas invasion. We didn't even know if he was going to walk around in his pyjamas for most of it. We didn't honestly know. So the dialogue was a bit off, the characterisation was a bit off. And I sort of went, hey, well, you know, I've done some Doctor Who magazine, please don't read it, but, you know, I'd like to do it at some point. And he was like, oh, well, you know, send us some pitches. And I sent a pitch in that was basically, if you've read Silver Screen, which is the first two parts of the ongoing, it was kind of that, but at the time it was the 10th Doctor and Rose meet the 4th Doctor and Sarah Jane. And it's basically a Sarah Jane who hasn't yet met Rose, but it's a Rose who's met Sarah Jane. So Rose is looking at her going, yeah, I can kind of see why you travelled with her. And sort of like, ha-ha. And she's like, oh, we're going to stay together. And Rose is like, yeah, good luck with that one. But it never got done. And then obviously Chris Ryle made the genius decision, actually, of getting Gary Russell to do the first arc. And I was like, oh, well, that's fine, you know, not a problem. But I actually had an email from IDW that was basically, yeah, you know Doctor Who, right? You know, you've written Doctor Who. So this Doctor guy, there's 10 of them, right? Do they all live together or something? You know, can we do a story where one of them's injured or kidnapped and they all have to go and get him or something? And I literally just cut and pasted Wikipedia and sent it and just said, read. And the scorn that I said that was written in like 18 font high. But yeah, basically, I wasn't the go-to guy. I just basically went for it. And then when they were doing it, they realised they had a chance to do another miniseries. And they just said, oh, well, you know, you've been pitching, you've been helping, have a go. And I picked three ideas. And I did like a gold, silver, bronze. The gold one was the absent back crap. Crazy one that had them all running around. The silver one was quite a nice one. The bronze one was just quite dull because I wanted to try and aim them at the sensible one, which I quite enjoyed doing. And it picked the insane one, which was all 10 doctors running around and doing this. And I was like, oh, good.
And these guys are crazier than I thought.
It was, and they allowed me to get away with a lot of stuff because there's a ton of little things in that we, I mean, we were using the chameleon arch. I have, if you haven't read it, this is a book that apparently is in Doctor Who canon. Now, make a noise if you've seen the eighth Doctor telly movie, or you've heard. There's a massive debate about it because in the telly movie they decide that the Doctor's half human. And everybody else sort of goes there. And I literally had a line in the 8th Doctor bit where the line, he just turns around and he goes, oh, you'll be able to get us through this. He goes, oh, yeah, I once convinced my worst enemy that I was half human with a nice smile and a half broken chameleon arch. And suddenly, like, I had all these fan groups just going, thank you. But we actually had it in the 10th Doctor story. So the 8th Doctor story was basically he was in his cell and he was finding something. And he was basically getting hold of like a DMAT gun. But it was basically, it was the thing that became the moment that sealed the Time Lords in the Time War. And I'm going, are we actually allowed to put this in the comic? And IDW went, yeah, we're all okay with it. And I was stunned because at this point, no one had said anything about it. And so they actually, I got away with so much. Go buy The Forgotten. It's really worth it.
Well, now, you had a lot of success with it. They went into reprints with it and so on. How much do sales affect, let's say, like you staying on with a particular line? Is it like any other business?
Sales will always affect it. Obviously, there's many reasons why there's a brand new number one for 11th Doctor. They'll make more money and sell more copies of a brand new number one than episode 18 or episode 17 or whatever it is. So you're always going to have number ones. Miniseries are the way forward at the moment, and when I say miniseries, I actually mean graphic novels, because people are now going, well, do you know what, you can just put it all in a book and stick it on Comixology, or, you know, and just get it printed, because so many books are actually being cancelled now before they even get to the trade. So it's yeah, money is always going to be an important part of it, because they pay a license to get these figures.
How much will the digital medium change that now? I mean, we're talking
physical books now, but now we're going into these people on their iPads.
I think it will, and it's one of the reasons I'm doing The Gloom with MTV, because it's pretty much all digital, and once it's gone on Comixology and it's been serialized, then we'll do the printed media. With Doctor Who, they don't really have... I don't know if they have the online rights, you see, so... they also, for those of you who don't realise, Doctor Who, the IDW series, is also not sold in England, which is a bit insane, because Panini have the rights in England for Doctor Who magazine, for the strip, which means that Doctor Who, you can't buy in England unless you find somebody who brings it in through various dodgy channels. So you guys actually get the comic and we don't.
I see a new business idea, smuggling in Tony's work.
Well, Tony, will they be doing Doctor Who for the iPad? They have,
No idea. Absolutely no idea. I'd love it.
Because there are other IDW titles for the iPad, right?
It all depends on, every title they have depends on what license they did, how they worked it through, how clever the legal people were, etc. Mm-hmm. I honestly can't answer that one. I do not know. Okay. I'd love to see it on the iPad or something. Because the only way you could, because at the moment, I mean, I get so many people to turn around to me and say, I love your book. I'm like, oh, where did you get it? He goes, oh, I illegally downloaded it. And I'm like, oh, that's nice. Can I borrow your car? And they basically, they go, but it's the only way we can get it, because I'm in, like, Kansas, or I'm somewhere, and my comic store won't stock it because they can't get hold of it, and I want to read it, and I just can't get it. So I'd love it to go online, because then you don't have to worry about it's run out of print or you have to do something else. But we'll see how it goes.
Do you feel by going out like this, it's creating an interest? Like, you're going to attend, you go to New York, and then you go to Chicago and L.A. and things like that. By having some boots on the ground, so to speak, by being here, what do you see from that? Is that the audience knows if they come to see you that you
will... I will cure them of all illnesses.
Yes.
Yes, that's exactly the reason I come to all these conventions, is purely to push that, not to drink or see people or have fun. Work.
We know you're having fun, and we also appreciate you. This is a bit of a story for those who may not be familiar with a long overdue interview this is. Back in April, we were supposed to have Tony on the podcast when we were in Icon, which is at SUNY Stony Brook in the springtime. And we were going to have virtual Tony there via Skype. And the university bandwidth was...
Well, there wasn't any.
Less than that. And so Tony did give up. It was your wife's birthday, or what was it? Something?
It was a friend's birthday, and we
friend's
were supposed
birthday.
To have a meal, and basically...
And he basically blew
I was like, oh, we can be a little bit late. And she was like, okay, that's fine. And we're sitting there, or I'm sitting there, and I've got James Norton. James Norton.
Our other co-host who's
also in England. And we're both on Skype with each other going, do you know what the hell's going on? No. And then somebody's going, we've just seen a tweet about the con from someone else going, it's all a bit wrong. Lewis is looking a bit stressed. Don't think you're going to be on.
So we promised him that we were going to do a very special episode, and everybody being here today has helped make this very special. It's special for Lewis and I because basically we thought Sunday at 4 o'clock at New York Comic Con, it would be the three of us and a couple of close friends who very generously filled a few of the chairs. And then Doctor Who fandom in New York is alive and well. And people at New York Comic Con have come out on Sunday for the last panel. The time that they could have been beating the traffic or getting a bargain in the dealer's room or something, they've queued up online outside and then come in for
standing room only.
So thanks for bailing us out of making good on a very stressful time only about 6 months ago by filling up our...
I will point out, I'm going to stop you there.
Yes.
Because you did promise me, and you did promise me, dancing girls.
The show's not over yet.
Where are my dancing girls?
That's at 5 o'clock. That's in the next room. We'll have that prepared specially. And
okay.
Yeah, there'll be a limited audience for something like that. No, I did not promise you dancing girls. I promised you drinks, and then you said to me, I'll have a Coca-Cola.
I wanted to be sober for the dancing girls.
So
I think we've got about 5 minutes.
We do. Our time is running out, and so we'll do a wrap-up portion of the program, and then we will stop the recording.
And then we'll exit
and
the room.
Well, Tony, have you
considered writing any other spin-offs of Doctor Who? Sarah Jane Adventures, there's a new series that's starting tomorrow in the UK.
Yes, it is, and it's going to be a good season because there's a certain Doctor who's going to be turning up in it.
And a certain past companion as well as returning.
And a certain line of dialogue that will solve a lot of problems.
Yep.
I'm not telling you what it is, and none of you can.
I love the fellas and girls at the front who put their hands over their ears, thinking that the power of these microphones is actually going to not penetrate past the hand.
Yeah, no, I wouldn't dare spoil it. I've been yelled at for things like that already just by saying simple things. And I like having fun with, I'm going to tell you a spoiler now, Matt Smith is the Doctor next season. You know what I mean? Like, what? Or Mike Smith is that guy who tries to run a con.
Oh, that's one thing I do want to say, very quickly before you do it. I do a lot of other comics, and there's one comic I am doing, which is going to be announced a lot more very soon. I'm doing a comic, I'm co-writing a comic, which is created, it's called The Troop, and it's created by Noel Clarke. Nikki Smith is doing a comic, and we've been talking about it on Twitter, and I just want to let you guys know, because I want you guys to spread the word, because when it comes out and when we announce it, we're going to need a massive grassroots campaign to make sure that everybody knows it's happening. If you like comics and you loved Vertigo, Wildstorm Universe when it was a bit grittier, this is perfect for you. If you love his movies like Kidulhood, Adulhood, it's just like that with superheroes, and it's brilliant.
Breaking news, this is fantastic.
And I love him. I want to be Martha.
You fit me for a red jacket. Well, Tony, thank you very much for joining us on a very special episode, as they say on almost American TV shows. And we'll see you.
And the fans have got my inner world where these things are. And a voice. Thank you very much for that.
And you can find our show on iTunes if you're not already listening to Doctor Who Podshock. It's available free via iTunes, or go to our website, podshock.net, and you'll find this episode that you're hearing right now and many others.
And we hope some of you will join us on our 25th anniversary event for the Gallifrey Embassy on Tuesday, November 16th in Mineola, New York. My name is Ken Deep, Louis Trepani on the other side, and Mr. Tony in the middle. And that's a wrap, as they say, right?
Thanks a lot, guys.
Again, everybody, thank you so much for sticking around to the end of the convention.
You can cue the dancing girls now. They can come in.
Cue the dancing girls.
What's that? It's a sonic screwdriver. Never fails.
Drop the sonic device.
Isn't my day, is it?
Even the sonic screwdriver won't get me out of this one.
Are you seeking Doctor Who news? The Sonic News Driver. Selected Doctor Who-related news stories delivered sonically. All in a bite-sized podcast. No bigger than a jelly baby.
Function of the sonic blaster,
a sonic cannon,
and a circle and folded sonic disruptor.
Doc, what you got?
I've got a sonic... Oh, never mind.
What?
It's sonic. Okay, let's leave it at that.
Disruptor, cannon, what?
It's sonic. Totally sonic. I have sonic thought.
A sonic what? Screwdriver!
The Sonic News Driver. Find it on iTunes or go to sonicnewsdriver.com.
Who has a sonic screwdriver?
I do!
The Sonic News Driver. Get yours today, sonically.
Neat, isn't it? Hmm?
Thank you for listening to our live show recorded at New York Comic Con the 10th of October. It was 10-10-10, or 42 if you're into binary and Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. So it was a special date for us for that reason, as well as having Tony Lee on our live show at New York Comic Con. It was also our first time that we were doing a live show at New York Comic Con, and we couldn't have been more thrilled with the turnout that there was there. If you were among the audience, thank you for attending, and thank you for listening again now here in this podcast. Remember, for all your Doctor Who needs, and if you want to discuss this episode or any other Doctor Who Podshock episode or any Doctor Who episode, go to our website, podshock.net or gallifreyanembassy.org, and there are forums there, there's news, and there's polls, and, well, there's a whole lot there. Check it out, podshock.net. You can send us your audio feedback as well by calling the Podshock public call box at 206-600-6517 or record your audio and send it to feedback@podshock.net. Once again, that's feedback@podshock.net. Remember, you can follow Doctor Who Podshock on Twitter. The Twitter address is @Podshock. You can follow myself, James, and Ken as well. Go to podshock.net. And on the left side column, you'll see a button to follow us on Twitter, and that will bring you to our Twitter addresses. Stay subscribed. We'll be back with another exciting and informative episode of Doctor Who Podshock. Until then, on behalf of James Norton, Ken Deep, and myself, Louis Trapani, cheers, everyone. You have been listening to Doctor Who Podshock, presented by the fan-run GallifreyanEmbassy.org. Doctor Who is owned and trademarked by the BBC. Doctor Who Podshock is not affiliated with the BBC in any way. Doctor Who Podshock theme music by Jeff Smith at thejeffsmith.com. This has been a production of Art Trap Productions and is presented to you by the Gallifreyan Embassy and has been made possible in part by supporting subscribers and donations from listeners like you. This episode is also supported by the Doctor Who Podshock Podcast companion app for the iPhone, iPad, and iPod Touch, now available in the iTunes App Store.
Doctor Who Podshock!
Ginger beer!
I beg your pardon?
I need ginger beer!